This is the Five After 40 podcast, episode 17.
Take care of all that consumer debt and do it with a debt snowball from the smallest debt to the largest debt. Again, there's a big emotional play in that. As you pay off a $100 debt, you feel good and I'm going to tackle that second debt, and it's $300 and you tackle that.
This is the Five After 40 podcast, a show where I dive into the FIRE movement to see what financial independence is all about. I'll share the steps I've taken to start my journey toward becoming financially independent, and along the way, I'll bring in others who are on a path of their own. You'll hear stories and advice from people who have reached their version of FI, and from those like me who are still finding their way. This is a show for anyone who wants to learn, grow, and connect with others. This is FI After 40. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the FI After 40 podcast. My name's Ben, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you if you're new to the podcast. I am so glad you found the show. I know you're going to learn a lot from the stories that people share here. If you're a returning listener, thank you as well. I've seen the show really growing over the last few months, so I just wanted to sincerely thank everyone who's taking some time out of their day to listen. I'm really looking forward to today's episode. I have Derek Saul as my guest, and he runs the blog lifeinmyfinances.com. So his work has been featured in a number of large publications, such as The Penny Hoarder, CNBC, Yahoo Finance, and The Huffington Post. He was kind enough to come on and share his story. It's a really good example of how life does not happen in a straight line. He's someone who has really experienced those highs and lows as he's gone through life. So we explore that path that he's taken that has him and his family now well on their way to financial independence. Hearing how he bounced from being debt-free, back into debt, going through a divorce, bouncing back from that, and now being debt-free once again while being in a great marriage and working towards FI, it's a really inspiring story. So I'm excited for the conversation. Let's jump over to it. Hope you enjoy. Today, I have Derek from lifeinmyfinances.com. Derek, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to dig into your story and learn a little bit more about how you've worked your way out of debt. I know that you've gotten yourself into a really strong financial position, and you've written about this in your blog. And so I'm excited to hear a little bit more about your story. So why don't you start off with just a little bit of background on where your journey started financially and how you kind of got to this point.
Yeah, I think it started, as most do, it comes out of college and you've got those college loans. You've got the debt. I didn't think I'd have any. I did end up owing my parents. They were gracious enough to kind of pay the bills, but it was always kind of an IOU. So I owed them about 12 grand coming out of school. My wife at the time, I think she owed six to direct loans, so through federal loans. So that was kind of the start of our learning about finances. Soon after, I started a blog just to track it, to figure out how to get out of debt. But that was really the beginning, and tons has happened since, but that was the lead in for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common story. People, you know, start with an initial debt coming out of college, and that's become even more of an issue more recently. Yeah. I know that's a big topic. So when you started to look at that debt and how you wanted to tackle that, what were some of the steps you took to chip away at that? And at what point did you decide, hey, I need to make sure that I can start working towards being debt free?
Yeah. Yeah. Initially, it was really freaky, actually. Just I made my income as a brand new college grad, and it's like 35 grand a year or something like that. So nothing big. And this was, you know, maybe 10, 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. Or more. I'm getting older. It's hard to keep track. But at that time, we didn't have a ton of money. We're trying to live in Boca Raton, Florida, which is not a cheap area. I always thought, like, yeah, I'll be a provider, like, no big deal, I can handle this. But when I actually sat down and made an Excel sheet, I realized even without those new student loan bills coming in, we were going backwards. And then we got the mail the one day, and it was from direct loans, and my heart just sank. And I was like, okay, like, we already don't have enough money to handle life, and now we have student loans too. And I know there's a ton of people out there that have that same exact feeling. It just somehow it just surprises you. I don't know how that happens.
Right.
But from that, we really just had to make a plan. We we had to figure out how do we make more at work? How do we maybe do some side hustles? What do we have to do? And it was like, that was the line in the sand. That was the, let's get going right now. We've got to figure this out. Otherwise we're going bankrupt. I mean, what choice do you want to make? Go bankrupt or get out of it? Obviously you want to get out of it. So we did a lot of stuff. I started my blog that started helping. We took on some kind of random side hustle stuff. And one of which I can remember was dog sitting and dog walking, mm-hmm. which actually is pretty decent money. I was surprised at that. And if you like dogs, like it's pretty easy. I mean, you have a dog in the house, you play with them, you take it for walks. So that can be, you know, a couple hundred bucks a week, maybe per dog. My wife at the time ended up, she wasn't working and she ended up finding a job through a school and didn't make a ton, but anything helps, you know, from the initial, we can't make the bills versus let's make an extra grand a month. It's huge. So I think that was our lead in. But then once we focused on it, once we looked at what do we need to get by each month? And then what can we do above and beyond that to actually chunk away at this, I guess it was 18 grand worth of debt. And how quickly can we get rid of that? And I'm pretty sure we took care of that in 14 months. It helped too. I ended up getting another job that had a sign-on bonus. And that was like the final stroke of the check, pay off the remaining $4,000 or whatever we had left. And that was our first experience of let's buckle down. Let's figure this out. And we were consumer debt free. Didn't own any house at the time, but debt free. And it felt awesome. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's got to be a huge lift. I know that people just tend to carry debt. I know that I, for a long time, debt was almost just something I accepted as like, hey, that's life. You have debt. Yeah. That's what everyone does, right? Yeah. And what was that lift like once you got to that point, though, that you were finally, you know, the relief of that not being hanging over you anymore?
It was great, especially since that last $4,000 is to my parents. Yeah. I'm not a slave to you anymore. Like,
right. That's even worse than owing the government, right?
Almost. And they never made me feel like that. They never brought it up, but it's just that internal feeling of like, I'm supposed to be an adult. Like I don't want to owe my parents money. Like, and I know that they were getting into retirement and they don't have a ton of money to begin with anyway. So it's like, I don't want to be this burden to them that they're not talking to me about, but maybe they're talking amongst themselves about or thinking about. And I wanted to help me by helping them just get out of that debt. So it was a fantastic feeling. At the time, like I said, I had a new job. We ended up moving back to home. We were in Florida. We moved back to Michigan. So all those feelings together were just a whole new lift for sure.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're debt free and you've paid off your parents, which is, like you said, that's a nice relief. So where did things go from there? I know you kind of talked about those highs and lows that you've gone through. So what was that next phase of your life like?
Next phase was interesting. My wife at the time, then we had gone through some issues. We didn't gel the best, yep. Even right off the bat. I think our initial honeymoon phase wasn't a year like most. It was maybe 4 months or something right. like that. But to get rid of the debt was helpful. But then beyond that, it was like we moved back home and that almost got more difficult with now we bring in all of our extended family dynamics too, along with finances, which we didn't necessarily agree on. She's definitely more of a spender. I was a saver. So we kind of did like most and we just got into the next thing of what's going to make us happy now. And that was a house. It was, you know, we're going to get this house. We're going to fix it up. It's going to be this new thing. And we're now going to be happy. And of course, life doesn't always work out like that.
Right. Yeah.
So with that house, obviously it came debt. It wasn't a huge debt. I was able to talk her out of the fancy new career person loft condo style, which was going to be, granted, houses and condos are cheap here in Michigan. But at the time it was like $150,000 versus this house that we could get as a foreclosure for $75,000. Right, so yeah. I was able to get the $75,000, which was great. But then it was probably, you know, I take some responsibility here too. Like she was a spender, but I was like ultimate saver. So we probably could have had a pretty good ground in the middle because I was like, we're going to pay off this house in 4 years. Like this is what we're going to do is we're going to map it out. And I want to say she was just burned out. She was ready to enjoy life. So that didn't work the greatest. I think we got it down to to 54, 55 grand, somewhere in there. And then kind of the inevitable kind of happened. Everything just came to a point. And I remember we're up in the bedroom, and she just said it. She was on the other side of the room and said, I want a divorce. And it broke me at the time. Looking back, it's been a great thing for where I am now, but I remember kind of slinking down the wall, not knowing what to do at that time. It was tough. So we had equity in the house. She wanted half of that. And that was basically all we owned. We had some cars. We didn't have any debt on cars. We were still consumer debt free. But what I then owed her was $21,000, I want to say, basically due to the house appreciated in value to 90 or 100 grand. We owed, you know, 55. So half of what our equity was came to 21 grand. So at that point, I was in debt again. I hated it, but it was a whole new push for me, a whole new reason. That initial get out of debt was almost a fear. Like I'm afraid we're not going to make it. Let's get out of debt. And this one became I'm upset that things didn't go the way I wanted them to go. And I just want to get rid of this debt to clear the ties and start new. So it almost became, it wasn't a fear, get out of debt. It was I'm pissed off and I want to get out of this situation. If I get rid of this debt tie, I think that's going to help me emotionally. That's kind of where it went. Then I'm sure people can relate.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of emotion behind anything with money. And that's one of the things, you know, I see people talk about kind of like the optimal way of paying off debt or the optimal way to live your life financially. And that's, you know, maybe that works for you if you can separate the emotional part of it, but that's hard for a lot of people. There's history behind certain purchases, yeah. There's relationships that are involved. So, you know, it's really difficult to just focus on the numbers when there's so much emotion behind some of those things that you've experienced.
Yep, absolutely.
So when you decided then, okay, I've moved on from this relationship, you know, I've got this house. Did you decide, you know, I got to get this thing cleared off too and get back to that zero debt because you just wanted that? That was kind of cleaning the slate from your previous relationship.
Absolutely. So first was take care of that new consumer debt that I had, right? And I did a ton to get rid of that. She wanted her payment in 6 months to get 21 grand. And I made like 60 grand a year through my day job at that point. So to come up with 21 grand, making essentially 30 in that half year, is like, okay, how the heck am I going to do this?
Right. Yeah.
While making a mortgage payment. But long story short, I did. I mowed lawns for my sister. I mowed lawns for my nephew. Like it was a completely humbling experience. But I was like, you're going to pay me $15? Fine. I'm going to go do it.
Yeah.
I wrote articles for super cheap. I think I wrote 200 or 300 articles inside of that 6 month span just for other bloggers for them to put on their site. So cheap deal for them. It was great for me because I needed money. Mm-hmm. I flipped cars, which I think a lot of people they're always kind of interested in, oddly enough. It's not the safest thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, cars can go, you can, you know, lose your transmission, your engine can blow up. A lot of big stuff can happen with cars, but it's always kind of worked out for me somehow. So I want to say I flipped 3 or 4 cars and made 3 or 4 grand that way.
So I've seen flipping houses. I haven't seen flipping cars. Do you kind of buy it with the intent of fixing up certain elements and then selling it for a profit? So is that the idea?
It's kind of the same as houses. It's a little more unique because of the whole, like, you have a motor in this thing that could go bad at any time. But it's when you walk into a house that you look to flip, you look at like, okay, I hope this thing has really ugly carpet and really ugly walls because this is really cheap to fix. But a lot of people would just walk right out of this place because it looks awful. Kind of the same thing with a car. You look at it and it's missing a hubcap. It doesn't have a headliner on the inside. Maybe it's got some, like the trunk doesn't open because of some latch, but you kind of in your mind know you can fix it or you can YouTube it. So it's kind of the same lines. Obviously it's a smaller investment going in, but your return is less obviously. But for anything I've flipped, it's been between $800 profit and $1,500 profit. So,
yeah,
and I can do it inside of two or three weeks versus a house, you've got to take months. So that was one of my thoughts, like, okay, I've got 6 months and I've got a little bit of money that I can put in a car, sell a car, put in a car, sell a car. And I've got a little background with it. My dad was a car dealer. So that's okay. Kind of in my blood to know what things are valued at, to know what kind of cars people are looking for. Yep. And then to know about if something's wrong with it, about how much it's going to cost to fix. So it, yeah, like I said, it was unique, but it was very handy at the time to be able to do that. So nice. I guess to answer your real question was, what about the house? After I got done with that 6 months, and I think I cleared that 21 grand just in time, just in that 6 month figure, I thought to myself, like, okay, I've got this other debt. And my wife she was off the deed. So we did a quick claim deed, but she didn't take herself off the mortgage for whatever reason. It didn't happen. But I was visualizing the day a year from then, like, that she'd call me or walk up on my front step and be like, okay, me and my new boyfriend, husband, right, whatever, like, we want to buy a house and I'm on this mortgage and now I can't get it. So we need to get me out. Like, I didn't want to have that conversation. Yeah, I didn't want that to be a thing. So that was my new motivation. Like, okay, I took care of 21 grand in 6 months. I want to get rid of this house debt too. Number one, because I wanted to before, but then also this emotional tie, just to be clear of it, would be amazing. So let's do that in a year. I think I can do that in a year. Let's just keep doing what I've been doing. Start January 1. I'll be done by the end of December. And I cleared it by December 11.
Oh, wow.
That year. So I did a little bit early. And it was just, looking back at the numbers, I still have no idea how that all worked out. But when your focus is just on, like, I'm going to do this, how am I going to do it? It's amazing how your mind can just find a way.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that, you know, you can kind of tackle it from both sides, where you can try to increase your income, you have extra cash, but have you focused on kind of budgeting and cutting back expenses? Great. Or was that more of something that was already naturally there for you?
No, great question. I didn't really touch on that. When I can't remember exactly when I did that, if that was the 6 month stretch or the pay off the house stretch, but I remember looking at my budget, because I, like I said, I was super frugal anyway. I didn't spend much money, but I thought, you know, to do this, I've got to save some too. I can't just do it with earnings, given how big of a leap that was from where I was. So I looked at each line item. I looked at, like, say, the last 6 months of expenses, what the average was per month. I remember looking at, you know, cell phone, $85. And I remember looking at, like, $85, like, that's a lot. Like, how did I not really look at this before? So it's one of these, and I could have taken that a variety of ways. I ended up calling, I think I had Verizon at the time, just saying, like, okay, it's 85. It seems high. Is there anything you can do? Otherwise, you know, I'm sure Sprint might like my business, or I'm sure T-Mobile might like my business. And it was amazing how quickly they came down to, like, $60. And I probably could have come down from there by switching to somebody else. Food was another one. Like, I didn't need to spend as much on food. I could just do minimal groceries. I didn't have to go out to eat. It's amazing how I think I spent less than $150 a month on food for myself. And I wasn't starving myself. I wasn't eating lavishly, but I still, it was nutritious. I'm sure I have an article on my blog floating around there somewhere about that. Gas for car was another big one. I ended up riding my bike to work almost every day, unless it was a monsoon or something. And I just couldn't.
That's great.
And it wasn't a lot, but every day I saved like $2. So at the end of the month, it was like an extra $60 in my pocket.
Yeah.
So just all those little things. It was amazing how much they added up. And I do have a post on my site. It was like, every month I can get by on just $460. I think the post was like $460 a month. What? Crazy? Whatever it's called.
Yeah.
It was really just four line items essentially. And obviously I had, you know, certain months there, I had property taxes which were much more, but really it came down to like what I need for food and what I need for, I think it was my cell phone. I didn't have a mortgage. That was then paid off once I figured out the 460. And I think that, I don't know, there's like insurance and something else in there, but it was super cheap to be able to get by on that much a month. Was just crazy to think about, but obviously possible.
Yeah, for me, a lot of times my budget tends to just be kind of on autopilot. Like, oh, I've got these built-in expenses. Yeah. This is just, I'm not even going to think twice about them. But to your point, you can call your cable provider, your phone provider, your car insurance, whoever. And they're open to, you know, there's so many times where I've done that and it's worked out. And it's like, I should do this more often. I should put in a little bit of effort to save a pretty decent chunk of change.
You can. I mean, just make a few phone calls. It might take 3 hours, but in the course of a year, it could be like $1,000. So you're making $333 an hour just by making those couple phone calls.
So we talked a little bit about the paying off your house and how there's the financial benefit, but there's also really this emotional part of it as well. So again, what was really the driving factor for you to make sure that this is something that I just kind of get off my plate and I'm not dealing with anymore?
I see it a lot in other blogs, whenever I post something about paying off your house, I always get these trolls that come on and like, well, what you really should do is just invest and you should take as much debt as possible in your house because it's cheap debt. And, you know, right now houses only cost 3%, whereas you can make 10 or 12% in the market. And I get it. The math seems to work, but they always seem to miss two aspects. One is just risk. So the more debt you have on your house, the more risk you've got. I mean, the more chance something happens. If you can't make your mortgage, then you lose your house. It's a big risk. If I just happen not to invest a little bit and something happens, okay, that's fine. I can now deal with whatever happened with the money I've got. But the other big aspect is just the emotional factor. So I haven't quite figured out how to put it in the formula, but it's with people that really hate the debt on their house, like they want to get rid of it. And if they want to get rid of it, they're going to do extra stuff to do that. That doesn't happen with investing. You don't think like, I'm going to invest 50 grand this year. And therefore I'm going to do these side hustles. I'm going to flip cars. I'm going to ask for a raise at work and I'm going to make that happen. It never really has that emotional feel to it when you want to invest. So I get that you should definitely invest while paying off your house, but I'd say, you know, invest 15%. And if you want to pay off your house beyond that 15%, like go for it, because you know what you're going to do. You're going to do extra stuff. You're going to bartend at night. You're going to do all these additional things to pay off. Like I did, that paid off 55 grand on a house in a year. I would never have invested 55 grand in a year. So there's this extra variable on that function. That's the scale of 1 to 10, how much you hate debt. If it's a 10, high, you hate debt, you want to get rid of your house now. That's a big part of the function that these other, I call them trolls. It's probably not very appropriate, but that these trolls never factor in. And if you're a person that you're one of these like super financiers and you don't really have the emotion to pay off your house, then maybe you shouldn't, because you're probably not going to have that extra drive. Then yeah, maybe you should invest it instead. So before I even say like, yes, person, pay off your house or don't pay off your house, I want to know how emotional that is for them. If that's something they actually have a passion to do or not, then that will then drive whether I advise they should or not.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole point, is that everyone has their own perspective on things. And for person A, the weight of debt and the kind of avoiding that is going to motivate you more than earning that extra cash to invest, right? And other people, they're all about optimization and they're all about hitting that maximum number. And so, yeah, there's having that self-awareness, knowing what's most important to you and what's most valuable in your own life is going to help you determine. There's no formula that everyone should follow. There's no instruction guide that everyone should follow. It's going to be a little different from person to person. And I think you can figure that out as you go a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
So now looking kind of forward past those initial experiences, you've obviously moved yourself into a much better financial position now. So what kind of changed afterwards that got you now to a point where you feel like you're in a pretty secure place?
Yeah, man, lots has changed. I think after I paid off the house, that was probably 2015. So we've got a good 5 years since then, but met my new wife. I've got a couple kids. She's definitely more financially minded than the last. That was one of the checkbox criteria. Let's make sure we're on the same page with money. So that's been huge. Right off the get go, she was working, I was working, we didn't have kids. So I didn't owe anything else to my ex, obviously. For those that have divorced with kids, I know that can be a challenge with alimony, but I didn't have that, thankfully. So I basically had a clean slate. So we pulled together probably within like 12 or 15 months, we already had some savings, but 80 or 90 grand we had pulled together to buy that first rental house. Again, housing's cheap in our area. Some people, it's going to boggle their mind, but I remember it was 81 grand. It was a foreclosure. It needed some things. So we put 9 grand into it. So, okay, it cost us 90 grand, but I think right off the bat, rent was $1,200 a month. So already we had an investment. It's going to appreciate in value because housing has definitely come up since then. But then we also have this $1,200 a month net at the end of the year. I think it still netted us like 10 grand or 11 grand every year since. So we then bought another house with, now we can accumulate cash faster because we still have work. We have no kids, but now we have this rental income of $1,200 a month. So call it another year goes by. We buy another house. We ended up actually flipping it. That's a whole other story. The initial intent was keep buying rentals essentially. But
yep.
But as you have kids and as you have a wife, like things can change. Your mindset can change. And I remember I said I was like polar, super saver, frugal, and my ex was like super spender basically. And we were polar opposites. Well, I think I started coming back toward that middle ground since self-reflecting and realizing, okay, this is the type of person I was, maybe I should relax a little bit. So what we ended up doing actually was we moved into a different house because at the time my new wife was living in the house that was mine and my ex's. So not the best situation. She never felt like it was hers. We had kids. At the time we had one kid, our daughter. And we just wanted a bigger yard, a bigger space to play, maybe a little bigger house. And that's okay. I mean, it doesn't always have to be a money play, I've learned. So we did. We ended up, so we bought that second house. We ended up flipping it and made 27,400 bucks, and used that along with a sale of our existing house toward our new. And we had, I think we were short by like 10 grand or something. So we did go into debt for a few months and got back out of it. So we now own a 2,000 square foot house on 6 acres with absolutely no debt. And wow. It's again in an amazing spot to be, especially now in these crazy times we're in, to not really worry about money. Like if I lost my job, we've got a nice savings, we've got other sources of income, like my blog, we've got the rental, we've got other things that we do on the side as well. So just to have that freeing feeling, we're not really worried about anything. And it's amazing how much that can help your relationship. And how that just changes your attitude toward others and outside people, outside things that could use support.
Having peace of mind is just, there's no price tag you can put on that, right? There's just something that, it just as financial stress can bleed into all parts of your life, the reverse is true. When you don't have financial stress, it kind of frees up that space to have good things in your life and have healthy relationships and focus on things that are valuable to you. So yeah, that's a great place to be.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned that, you know, your wife now checked off some of those boxes about being more financially minded. So how quickly did you guys talk about that kind of stuff? Because I know that that's a big part of people's relationships. Was that like, hey, day one, I want to find out what your take is on debt? Or did you just kind of, you know, figure that out over time with her?
I should ask her. It was for sure by date number two. It may have been date number one. I remember talking about my blog and how much I earned through that. And so we definitely talked about money on day one. But I think we were both there. She had an ex too. We had a similar situation where her husband was pretty irresponsible with money, just never really handled it. So I think for both of us, that was an interest, whether we came out and said it right away or not. I think we were both kind of listening for it in the conversations that we were having. So yeah, and I remember even mapping out, it was probably like, call it date number six or something. We were already like mapping out like, what if we did this? And what if we bought a rental? And what if, so already we were testing the waters, not just on what, are you frugal or not, but how do you feel about investments in the future of stashing cash away and investing for more versus just, you know, saving or being frugal. So yeah, lots of conversation for sure.
It makes a big difference when you can feel like you're on the same page with finances. It tends to be something, there's a lot of couples who, you know, one person manages the money, the other person doesn't really pay attention. And that can obviously lead to some problems if, you know, if you're not on the same page.
No, I feel so comfortable with her. A lot of times she'll be like, I'm thinking about buying some clothes. And she hasn't bought clothes for like 2 years. I'm like, go buy some clothes. Like,
yeah.
If you need them, go do it. So it's a different freeing feeling just with that connection with your spouse, knowing like I can totally trust them. I don't need to worry about, you know, what did they spend with my ex, just for an example, for comparison. Anytime we had an argument, I could guaranteed you, I'd look at the statement 2 days later and there'd be at least a $200 or $300 charge in there for her. What do they call it? It's like shopper's therapy. What do you call that? It's like,
yeah,
she'd go clothes shopping anytime she got upset and spent a bunch of money in it. That was her way to make herself feel good. Well, that didn't equate very well with our budget. So that doesn't happen today.
That's great.
And that's a huge, huge plus for sure.
So what are some goals that you guys are working towards together right now?
Yeah, we've got a few and they're starting to wrap up too. So we've actually got to think about what's next, or maybe we just start to have fun. And we do have fun, but I mean, like, to a whole new extent.
Yeah.
So we've thought about kids' college. And I've done the math. That's one complex thing to map, like to figure out mathematically, by the way. Like, college is increasing by 7% every year. But then at the same time, you've got dollar inflation. To try to pinpoint, like, how much exactly do I need now and invest it, and what will that investment grow to, and will it be enough given the inflation of college? So I put a calculator together on my site, by the way, just for my own sake, but for everyone else's sake too.
That's great.
And we put, I think we've got like 25 grand into each kid account basically at this point. And we plan to cover half. My parents did that with me too. I owed the money, but to have your kid to have some stake in the game with college, I think is a good thing. So we will have money later in case we decide otherwise, but we've pretty much planned on, okay, that 25 grand is going to grow into 80 or 90 grand. And at that time, you know, that'll cover probably 2 years worth of college, or, you know, half of each semester for the 4 years, or however you want to play that out. So we've got that set. We want to put our kids through private school. Our daughter actually starts in a month now, assuming that happens. But we want to put them in private school. So it's going to have a cost. So we've actually started saving for that. I think my initial mindset was always, you know, we'll pay for it as it comes and that'll be fine. But as we step back, I'm like, well, what if we just invest now? I mean, and that was probably 6 months ago we started thinking that way. And then the dive in the market happened. We're like, well, let's do it. So we started chunking money into the market. So if we, I think for each kid through, you know, preschool through 12th grade is like 100 grand or something for the private school in our area. And it's a great, great school and we consider it totally worth it. But to have that much saved, we've got to put together like 110 or 115,000 now for it to grow and for it to last the 13, 14 years, whatever it is. So we're getting close to that actually, surprisingly, but as we had some money there and as the stock market's was down and has since come back, it's become a reality a lot faster than what we thought. So we've got that. And the future goals is maybe I retire early. And I'm not sure I want to do that. I like my job. I like what I do for blogging. I don't know that I want to do either one by itself without the other.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our next thing, is just let's go FI. Let's be financially independent, whether it's a true FIRE, retire early or not. That can be decided later, but I think we're going to stash some cash, and we're also going to maybe have a little extra fun on vacations. And I'm sure with the kids growing up, we'll have many unexpected expenses that'll take care of some cash too. So
yeah, so
that's really the next. And doing the fix up rental, it's busy. So to do that with young kids, I think we pretty much said like, let's wait a couple of years. So that's kind of on the back burner, but I think that's where we want to invest some cash too in the future. Cause it's been a great investment. Our initial rental that we bought for after we fixed it up, that was 90 grand. It's worth 170 already. And it's only been about 5 years. and it still nets us, you know, 11, 12 grand a year. So for that initial cash input, it's been a 25%, almost 25% return year over year for that 5-year stretch. So we'd love to do that again if we can find another deal, but maybe once the kids are like 8, 9 years old, something like that, and they can help out a little bit, we can teach them a little bit about fixing up a house. I can pay them a little salary maybe for what they're fixing up, and we can learn about money. So I think all that could work out pretty well. But as of right now, we're kind of taking it easy. We're enjoying life, which I think is important.
Yeah, you've got options. I think that's really when it comes down to it, whether you want to retire early, whether you want to keep working, if you want to get another rental, like you're saying, there's a lot of things you could do, and you don't have to feel like you're just pegged into this one lifestyle that you need to maintain, because otherwise you can't afford to support your family.
Exactly.
You can now make some choices. And I think that's really what being financially independent, that's one of the main benefits of is it just affords you that flexibility to make choices about what's important in your life.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And you don't know what life's going to be like 5 years or 10 years from now. You can project it, but my work might totally change, or maybe I get let go, or, you know, maybe I decide something else is a passion and it's not finance. Who knows? So to have the dollar set aside, to have that flexibility, I think is just the best place to be, regardless if you're, you know, actually at your end goal or not, but to have that option, to have that flexibility, I think you're absolutely right.
So you've mentioned your blog a couple times. So just touch on how that's kind of impacted you. It's been something you've been working on for a while. I think initially you said it was to make a few bucks to kind of just pay off some debt, and it's something that you've maintained. So how has that played a role in your life since you started it?
It's played a huge role, and in multiple ways too. When I first started it, the name Life and My Finances came up because I wanted to talk about both my life as well as finances. I didn't want to be a blogger that just, you know, came up with an article about taxes and I had no personal stake in it. I wanted to say, like, here's where I am in life and here's how it affects my dollars. Or maybe it doesn't affect dollars at all. Maybe it's just a life topic. And my wife's dad passed away a couple of years ago. That was an article just to get off my chest. Like, here's what I admire about this man and here's why. Like, So to have the mix, to have just finances by itself, I think is a miss. I think the combination of both is powerful. So it's kind of been my diary of sorts, almost. Not, you know, it's not real manly to have a diary, but but I definitely have written out, you know, what my emotions have been for all the different life events. And there have been a ton over the past almost 10 years I've had the blog. So secondarily is obviously the financial scope. So the blog has earned money and it's enabled us to do more things. So to buy the rentals, to save up for the kids' college, whatever it is, it's been huge. At times, you know, I may have earned net only 7 grand, but there are other times where I can net 20 or 30 grand a year. And for some bloggers, that's still pennies. For others, that's like, holy crap, that's a ton of money.
Yeah.
I think I'm somewhere in the middle, but it's been a huge help. It's definitely nothing to sneeze at if you can talk about an extra 20 grand a year that really you didn't have any expenses slated for being covered by that. It's all just extra. So it's been a huge learning curve to start, but it's been quite an experience along the way. And I probably should mention too, the network of bloggers too, the finance bloggers are just amazing. So yeah. To make a few friends through there, and I've gotten to know you a little bit over the past month or so, and I think that's just a huge network to have too, and to make those friendships who you can talk about money with, because it's not every day you just start talking about where you are financially with people at work, right, or even with your close friends. Like, it can be awkward. So from that aspect too, I think as a third point is just it's been good emotionally to learn and grow, both in finance, but also in life through the network that I've made through blogging. It's been awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefits that I've found since starting it. And I'm in a similar way. I needed to get things out of my head. I was just thinking about stuff and I'm just kind of cycling through. And yeah, I could never really put together a journal. I couldn't get that rhythm going. And I was like, if I do something that's public, then there's some kind of external accountability where I'm like, oh yeah, I should post something this week. I should post something this week. And that will help keep me on task. And it really has, like, I've done that and it's been helpful. But to your point, it's also been something that I've connected with people. And I wasn't even necessarily looking for that, but it's been, that has been even a bigger kind of gain for me, is just learning from other people and hearing their stories. And that's been such an inspiration for me, and it's motivated me to keep pushing forward with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
So as we wrap things up, I would love to hear your perspective on just some general advice for people who are maybe starting this journey a little bit later in life. They have not done a great job up to now with prioritizing their finances, and they're kind of going through maybe some of those lows that you've gone through in your life. So how would you advise those people to take some steps moving forward to get themselves going in the right direction?
Yeah, just number one is just keep it simple. There's a ton of information out there. And if you go out there and search, it can just be overwhelming and it can be paralyzing. It can cause you to do nothing rather than to actually take care of the situation you're in. So actually, I like the Dave Ramsey steps a lot. I give him credit for them. So just to save, his step one is like save a grand in your little baby emergency fund just in case something terrible happens. And then step two is just take care of all that consumer debt and do it with a debt snowball from the smallest debt to the largest debt. Again, there's a big emotional play in that. As you pay off a $100 debt, you feel good and I'm going to tackle that second debt, and it's $300 and you tackle that. So I love the debt snowball. So I'd go that route too. And that, just those two points will carry you a long way. If you just continually chunk the debt, if along the way something happens where, you know, maybe your water heater goes out in your house or something, and you've only got a grand in your emergency fund, but that's, it's just enough to figure out how to fix that water heater. And it's not quite enough to just say, whatever, you know, I'll just stroke a check to the first person I call that can fix it. So I think it's a great dollar amount. Maybe you have to call a buddy that kind of knows how to do something, and you find a used one that somebody doesn't want anymore, but it still works, and you put it together and you get by for the next 2 years. That might be your grand. That might be how you work it, instead of spending, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 to have someone just come fix it. So those first two steps, I'll just leave it at that. That alone will get you quite a ways.
What about people who say, you know what, I'm 45. I've kind of made my bed at this point. I don't really have a lot of time to figure all this stuff out. I'm just going to coast through the rest of my life with my current lifestyle. What's your perspective on it being too late to make those changes?
Yeah, that's such a sad statement to hear. And I've definitely heard it. I can't be friends with those people. First of all, there could be another 45 years plus of their life, and they're just going to say, did the best I could.
Yeah.
No way. There's always time to change. Yeah. You know, thankfully you hear some of those stories of like, 85-year-old does this new thing. Like, I was going to say skydiving. I'm not sure that's an aspiration, but yeah. But there's people that start new things at any age, and you should, no matter what it is. Like, there's always time to make a change, and you always can start today. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that's great advice. It's a good perspective to have. So, Derek, thank you for coming on the show. This is a great conversation. I love hearing your story and all the progress you've made. I'm excited to follow your journey and see where you end up with this. Where can people follow you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, the easiest way, just head to my website. Again, that's lifeinmyfinances.com. And there you can see in the upper right, I've got a Twitter, Pinterest, and Facebook page. So you can click on those and find me through my page there. And if you want to reach out toward the bottom of the site, there's a contact text there that you can click, and that'll open up a window where you can put your name and your email, and then also what you need. And I do tend to respond to every email that comes my way. So if you have a need or you just want to say, hey, thanks, whatever it is, reach out.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, it's been awesome, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Derek for coming on the show. What a great story he has. The way he was able to find ways in his budget to free up some cash, make more money, pay down those debts through side hustles. I mean, literally walking dogs to make extra money and going to a place where he's now pretty close to financial independence. It's, again, an inspiring story. I learned a lot from it. I hope you did too. I would encourage you to check out his website, lifeinmyfinances.com. It's a great blog. There's a bunch of resources there, calculators that you can use to look at paying down debt, saving for college. So lifeinmyfinances.com, check it out. Again, thank you for listening to the show. I really appreciate you taking that time out of your day. So I hope you enjoyed it, and I will talk to you again next week. To read more about my story, be sure to follow me at FiAfter40 on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can also subscribe to receive updates whenever new content goes up at FiAfter40.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review. It makes a big difference. Thanks for listening.